If you don't like it, don't tell them anything.
Okay, so tonight I want to share with you, I definitely wouldn't call it a thought. It is a long piece by Rabbi Grumman. I spent last Shabbos in Lakewood. It's the first time I've ever been in Lakewood, other than the Blue Claws baseball game. And it's my first time. It's my first time spending Shabbos there. So I was like a little bit nervous what Shabbos was gonna be like. It was a family simcha. I had to go. It was Malki's side, so really, really had to go. So the first miracle was it took us. That's fine. The first miracle was it took us an hour and 40 minutes on Erev Shabbos to get there, and the second miracle was that we beat Waze by 10 minutes on the way back, and got back in an hour 45 also, which was pretty impressive.
Feet us there.
Stopped, aren't you? Did you do the doctor? That was you.
No, we did not. I didn't drive, but second of all, Malki did. But we did not speed at all. It was pretty amazing. But on Shabbos day, Minyan was very, 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 very long. The bar mitzvah boy gave a pshetel that he lost me, which if a pshetel is supposed to be like a small whatever, this was a 20-minute like chabura. It's in English. And I, at a certain point in time, I lost him. So I got lost in my thoughts, and this piece by Rabbi Grumman kept me plenty busy. I think it's pshat, but it's a complicated pshat that I'm sure will frustrate, as it did the people that I shared it with over Shabbos. And as I was walking, it's pretty cool, I was walking past Brisk, Rodden, and Kelm with my daughter to find a playground. These were the thoughts that went through my head. So I want to share them with you tonight. So Yaakov spends his entire lifetime in conflict. Maybe the very big... Oh, thank you. It is written there. We're going to learn tonight the 30th yard site of Ari's dad, Lilu Nishmas Harav Daniel Ezra ben Harav Mordechai, who's Neshama Shav and Aliyah. The Torah just started. The intro was not, but thank you for reminding me. So Yaakov spends his entire lifetime in conflict. Maybe the first couple of years, like till he's about 15, when he goes and steals, whatever you want, does his thing with the brachos, or not the brachos, the bechora from Esav. He has very little time in his life where he's at peace. Yet I think the drama at the end of his lifetime is probably the greatest struggle of all. It's a struggle he has with Yosef in Parshas Vayechi. And the question is, how will he manage? Rabbi Grumman argues that Parshas Vayechi is the struggle for each of them, Yaakov and Yosef, to stake their legacy in the Jewish people. And if you carefully read the psukim, it is amazing that there is a story within the story that you could so easily miss. And yet, when you see it, you really are amazed at the conflict between Yaakov and Yosef at the very end. So, here we go. Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim 17 shana. Yaakov lives in Mitzrayim for 17 years. The Chizkuni asks a simple question. Why does it say Vayechi that he lived there? Why can't it say Vayeshev or Vayogar? Right? Vayechi, you don't need that word. So the Chizkuni says that the only years in Yaakov's entire life that he could truly say that he was chai, that he lived, belit tsar, nothing at all, was these 17 years. But the rest of his life was not. And yet, what I'd like to argue tonight is that these 17 years were probably more challenging for him than perhaps the 130 before that. So he lives through 17 years in Egypt. Yaakov shnei chayav sheva shanim v'arba'im u'ma'at shana. Yaakov lives to be 147 years old. Vaykrivu yimei Yisrael lamut. So Yisrael's days to die come close. Vaykrav levno Yosef. He calls his son Yosef. Vayomer lo. He says to him, Im nama tzadichem beinecha, simna yadcha tachet yirechi. If I find favor in your eyes, I ask you, please, put your hand underneath my thigh. Vasita imadi chesed v'yamet, do chesed v'yamet for me. Rashi points out chesed v'emet, this is true chesed shel emes that we talk about. There's no way that Yaakov will be able to repay him for what he's doing. Al natik bereini b'mitzrayim. I beg you, don't bury me in Egypt. V'shachavti mavotai. I'm going to sleep with my fathers, right? I'm going to be dead and laying, you know, eternally like that. Unesatani mimitzrayim. I ask you to please carry me out of Egypt. Ukvartani v'kuratam. And I want to be buried in their burial plots. Vayomar anochi e'eseki dvarecha. So Yosef says, I'll do whatever you want. If you're Yaakov, isn't this good enough?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, what is he saying? He's saying, I'm asking you, I have one request. My request is I don't want to be buried in Egypt. Why? Rashi gives a lot of answers why. Mm-hmm. Right? He's nervous about Kenim. Right? The lice that are going to go through the land. What else is he nervous about? He's nervous about that the Egyptians will turn him into a god. And the third thing is that somehow, when Tchias HaMesim comes, being buried outside of Eretz Yisrael, we won't have to go above ground, but there'll be underground rolling to get from wherever you're buried all the way to Israel. So he didn't want that. I don't know what that means. Right, so that's his concern. Those are all of his concerns. How about a simpler answer?
He wants to be buried with his hands.
Yeah, he wants Kever Avos. Okay, that's a good one, right? My grandparents all insisted that Kever Avos was not where they wanted to be, but that's because their parents were buried in Auschwitz. But what, right? What is it? Right? What is it that they? What is probably the most basic answer? Right? Why did they not want? Why did he want to be buried in Canaan? It's home. So that's what he says. And then Yosef answers, Anochi HaSeket Recha, Dad, I'll do whatever you want. Why isn't that good enough? Because afterwards in Laman Aleph, what does Yaakov say? No, Vayomer Hishavali. I want you to swear to me. Swear to me that you're going to do what you said. Vayishavalo. He swears.
Okay.
Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh HaMitah. And Yaakov bows down to the top of the bed. Rashi says, why does he bow down? A fox in its time, you have to acknowledge it. Meaning, for the moment, Yosef was royalty, and he had to acknowledge that. So the question, there's a lot of questions that I think we could ask on these psukim. Number one, why does he need a shvuah? Yosef says, Anochi Yaseh Kedvarecha. Isn't that enough?
Cover with Paro.
Right.
But why didn't, if he is concerned that he wanted a shvua, why didn't he say to him in the first place, swear this?
Right. Yeah, meaning, right. So why doesn't he ask for this, the promise? What is this whole, you know, thing about, like, I want you to, simna yalcha tachas yerechi. I mean, it's so uncomfortable when we think about it by Abraham, but there it's his servant. Now you're talking about, like, dad asking for that? It's so weird. Why does he have simna yalcha tachas yerechi? And the Shvua, are they, meaning, is it the same thing? Now, Rashi
isn't that the physical method of, the physical metastasis of, the physical, the
manifestation.
Physical manifestation.
Jeez. That works too.
That was it. Physical manifestation of the swearing. That's what they used to do.
Yeah, well, they used to put their hands on, like, something holy, and Avram says, well, I don't have anything holy, but I guess this is my first mitzvah, so why don't you place your hand down there? And Eliezer is probably like, man alive, it stinks to be an Eved Knani, but I guess I don't really have an out here, so all right, fine, I guess. But I guess the question is, let's say that's true. Let's say it's true. I would ask you the question, does Yosef ever do that? Look at the psukim carefully. This is one that I never saw. But if you read the psukim carefully, I would ask you, did Yosef fulfill what Yaakov wanted?
Well, you assume so.
Well, what does Yaakov say? Yaakov says, I have three parts to what he's saying. Number one, I want you to put your hand on my bris milah. Number two, right? I want you to promise, I want you to make sure I don't get buried in Egypt. And number three, swear. Well, what does he do? Anochi Eseket Varecha means what?
I affirm.
I'll do what you want, which means that I won't
Well, I don't know, but these guys...
I won't allow you to be buried in Egypt.
These guys, it could be Anochi,
Okay, but let's say not, right? You have to, I don't know, what's the trub? Vayomar Anochi Asekid
Varecha. What difference is the explanation?
But,
like Yaakov Polder with the brother.
You know, yeah, like Anochi, Esa Bechorecha.
So Anochi seems extra. You could just say Asekid
Varecha. Yeah, he could just say that, all right. So
why also the difference? There's a lot of back and forth between Yaakov and Yisrael. Just back and forth and back and forth.
Right, so because part, so I, this was actually pretty cool. I was, my favorite part of my job in school is when I get to go into classes and just watch them learn. And so I walked into a fourth grade class, and Rabbi Harris goes to the boys. I'm going to ask you a really hard question. And because Rabbi Merrill is here, you guys could really, really, really impress him. And he said, he asked a question, which I thought was an impressive question for a fourth grader, because I certainly didn't know this in fourth grade. He is teaching the end of Vayishlach. So he says, why is it that it jumps back and forth from Yaakov to Yisrael? So a kid raises his hand and says, it's because when it's talking about Yaakov, the ish, the person, the individual, he's Yaakov. When it's talking about the Yaakov as he relates to the Jewish people, so then what? He becomes Yisrael. So in Pasuk Chavchet, it's just telling us, Yaakov, the individual, got old. But in Pasuk Chavchet, when he's talking about how he wants to be buried, you're talking about, this is not just about Yaakov. This is about the legacy of the Jewish people. So it flips to Yisrael. But if you read the Pesukim carefully, what I think is fascinating is Yosef never puts his hand on Yerech Yaakov.
Well, you don't know that.
Well, if you take a look at Chav Dalid, which is the source below the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban. So, Vayomer Avram Elav, those kam beto mashov chol shelo, simel yad chatachas yireichi. So what does he say? Avram says to his servant, Eliezer, I want you to put your hand underneath my thigh, right? Which is the same thing he's asking him here. And then what does he say? Vashbiachah v'shem okay, shamayim okay, aretz shol tikach yishal levni, v'vino saknani yasher nocho yishay b'kirbo. He makes him swear, right? So it's two things. Now look at Pasuk Tet. Vayasam ha'evet yado tachas yerech Avraham. First, it tells us that he takes his hand and he places it underneath his yerech. And then, Vayishav alo al davar hazeh. Then it says that he swears. But what does it say in Pasuk Lamed Aleph above? Vayomer, Hishav ali Vayishav alo, he says swear and he swears. Vayishtachu yusol roshamita. When it says Vayomar anochi haseket varecha in Lamed, what is that talking about? Presumably, it's talking about, I will do what you want, which is that I will what?
Bury you in
I will make sure that you're not buried in Egypt.
Sorry.
If that's the case, it seems as though this Simna Yad Chatachas Yireichi doesn't actually happen. Is that significant?
Or it's happening and this whole process is while his hand is there. Why can't we assume that?
But then why did Eliezer...
My word's not good enough.
But then why by Eliezer does it not say that?
Eliezer's in heaven.
He's starting with a medrash from Eliezer. He wanted to do it with his daughter, so he wanted to make sure that it says...
This is his son, of course he's going to do it.
So I'd like to make the argument that if whatever the servant's name is, we'll call him Eliezer. If we had to choose between Eliezer and Yosef and try to figure out, according to Pshat, which one of them is more reluctant to do what the person is asking him, I'd like to make the argument tonight that Yosef is far more reluctant. Eliezer, of course.
He doesn't want to get rid of his father.
Why is that a shocker? Eliezer is the Eved. Yosef is the son. A son placing his hand anywhere near his
If you become so laser focused on that one point, yeah, I hear it. That's awkward. But the question is, what is Yosef being asked to do? Yes, I hear that. That's really, really awkward. I certainly would never ask that for my kid. And nowadays, if you ask that from your kid, that's it. You'd be in the court of His Honor Judge Ari. Yeah. And I bet you if that happened, he would look up from his phone the entire time.
I'd be placing them all with Feldman.
Right. So I think I think.
Can we say that when it says "Vayomer Anochi Asek Baracha," means okay,
I didn't do it.
I'll put my hands on your loins.
So I think it's possible, but I would think that it's more likely that what he's saying is, fine, Dad. Right? Mm-hmm. I'll do what you want.
Why do you think Yosef would be more welcome to do?
So that's the bigger piece. And that's where I got my... That's where like a... I like to take the whole chabura, put it into like a 5-minute nutshell, and then share it with somebody on Shabbos and just get a reaction. And most people, either they're like, oh, it's nice. I get a huge eye roll. That's when I know I'm in business, right? Or I get like a question here and there. So my brother-in-law and I were sitting next to each other in shul at lunch, at mincha, at shalosh shudis. And we'd already sat next to each other at Friday night dinner. So we had spoken to each other quite a bit. So this like 5-minute nutshell that I shared with him like right before the Bar Mitzvah boys pshetel, like all afternoon, he was like trying to explain to me why he didn't buy it. And I tried really hard to tell him why I believed in it. But I think that that's what we have to unpack. Shook.
Because if it was Brun, I'd say he would roll his eyes to anything.
So the question I think is we have to try to figure out what is it that Yosef is fighting his father about? But before we do that, I would like to take a look at Pasuk Chaf Tet and Pasuk Lamed. It is the request that Yaakov makes of Yosef. And I want you to try to do for me, because I need to take a drink. I want you to try to figure out what's extra in those psukim. Chav Tet Lamed. What does Yaakov say that's extra?
I think it's the Chesed Emes. And I think that this whole thing has to do with the word Vayishtachu, that because he is second to Paro, even though his father's making this request, his father still has to give him kavod. And him, as the second in command, putting his hand in that place is subservience, and he can't show subservience while he's in Egypt.
Okay. So I don't agree with your words, but I agree with your concept. Okay.
Well, my word. Why doesn't he say with no Yosef? I mean, that's somewhat redundant there.
Okay, so that's not him talking, meaning that's like narration. Why is that? So I guess you can make a nice like drush out of it. That's probably not far off from pshat, is to say that despite the many, many years that they were separated from each other, at this point in time, Yosef is 56. Of his 56 years, he only spent 17 years in direct contact with his dad, his first 17 years. So to say, I think that it's Livno, even though he's Yosef, he's still Beno, he's still his son.
But, so, in the Pasuk Lamed, I mean, first he said, I'll not sit for rain to be
tried. That's where I was coming.
Okay.
I want to be with my folks. Now he goes back. When it's a signing of Mitzrayim, you have to get me out of Mitzrayim first.
Look for a time.
Look for a tiny bit for a sum and go back and...
Okay, good.
Chavtet is the extra.
So you don't really need, I'll not take Bereini b'Mitzrayim, if you have Unisatani b'Mitzrayim.
Right.
But how about this? If I was Yosef, if I was Yaakov, this is all I need to say. Okay? Watch this. Vayikra Livno Yosef, he calls Yosef his son, Vayomer Lo, he says to him, if I find favor in your eyes, right? I'm going to die. I want you to bury me in the ancestral plot of Avotai. Why does he need the whole Simna Yad Chatachas Yerechi? Why does he have to do the Chesed B'Amet? Why I'll not take Vereini Mitzrayim? And why do you need Tani Mitzrayim? If he says, I'm going to die, bury me in the Kever Avos.
Why does he say, if I die, he doesn't want to bury him before he's dead?
No, because you need to say, you can't say just Ukvartani Bekvuratam, right? Im Namat Sadichain Benecha, Kvartani Bekvuratam. You have to have, the Shachati Mavotai is saying, that I want to, when I die, right? I want to be buried with my avos.
I'm supposed to not want to die. All right, fine.
Okay, so that he could just say, you know, right, if you like me, Kenan. Come on, Yosef, you got to figure it out. You're a smart guy. You figured out Yosef's dream, Yaakov's dream. You figured out Paro's dreams.
He's right. If you like me, bury me with my father.
Well, right.
I'm buried in the ground.
No, but if you like me, bury... Right. When,
no, but that makes sense.
You don't because
you
say,
if he just says, I'm not burying Mitzrayim, that means don't bury me here, bury me anywhere else. What he's trying to say is don't bury me anywhere else. I want to be just in that one spot.
Right. But that's why I'm saying so.
He's doing that all in Lamed.
Right. You have to have a meaning... Right, like,
it's redundant.
No, I say that because, you know, sometimes people tell you they're going to die and they're not really ready for it. Like, I remember when my grandmother turned 100-ish, like, it was right after her 100th birthday, she called me for, like, a really important meeting. And she was like, you're going to do my funeral. And I was like, okay, great. Grandma, like, I'll do whatever you want. And I was like, but you're going to live a long time. Like, you look great and you're in good shape and you're still living, you know, totally on your own. And she's like, yeah, whatever. But when it happens, like, this is not, like, the same thing. My grandmother then called me 5 weeks before she died. She goes, it's going to happen really soon. So I want you, you're going to promise me you'll still do it. I was like, I got you. But that's, I think that's what's going on here. Is he's saying, like, this is it. Okay, I'm 147 years old. I know my days are done. When I die, bury me bekever avos. But why do you need all the other stuff? That's my question. Why so wordy? Just say, bury me in Canaan. So the three questions that I want to try to understand is, why do you need the Shvuah? What's the whole concept of the Tachas Yirechi? And why is this so wordy? So that's what I want to try to understand. So take a look at the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra asks why he bows down. Shechala kavo lemalchus. He was giving honor to the king, to be the king. And he says also, I'm willing to say that when he bows down, he's actually bowing down in thanksgiving to God. So Rabbi Grummet, though, argues a little bit differently. He says the reason he bows down to him is there's a lot of tension going on. And there's a lot of his anxiety is calmed at this point in time, because Yosef has agreed to what he wanted, which was not a slam dunk in his mind. And the fact that Rabbi Grummet argues, the fact that Yosef does not put his hand, tachas yirechi, would be an indication that he's saying, oh, whatever, I'll do whatever you want. But you're not doing whatever I want, because what I want is simna yadcha tachas yirechi. It's part of the whole thing. And in the end, he's like, fine, I'll swear. Once he does that, and he's willing to now say, I cede my authority to you, Yosef. You are, as the Ibn Ezra says, your Malchus. Take a look at the Ramban. The Ramban asks why there's a need for a swear. And so this is what he says. La Yaakov choshed b'vno atzadik ha'ahuv. Yaakov was not choshed, his son, the tzadik, the one he loved, sheyamrel mitzvah saviv, that he would rebel against the word of his father, v'aladavar asher hivticho, and the thing that he had asked him for, v'amar anochi aseket v'recha, because he had already said anochi aseket v'recha. Why is that not enough? Avala sakein l'chazek ha'inyan b'nei paro, ulai lo yitein lo rushut li pared mimenu, although maybe, because he was nervous that Paro would say, I'm not giving you permission to separate. That he would say, you're not allowed to go on to the funeral, Yosef. And he would send the brothers up. Or perhaps Paro would insist that Yaakov be buried in Egypt. Because he would not, Paro would not let him go and break this Shvuah. And Yosef would work a little bit harder because of the promise. And that is actually how it plays itself out. Moshe Mar, like Paro says, the Ramban says that there's no question. There was no conflict. There was no turmoil. It was a slam dunk. Yosef was going to do what Yosef was asked to do because Yosef was Bivno HaTzadik. He was the Ben Ha'huv. He was the beloved son. Not even a question. Who agrees with the Ramban?
Not you.
Yes, thank you.
It but was him. I didn't say it.
What's the consensus? Is the Ramban pshat?
Nope.
Why not?
Because all these years you've been talking about how you didn't know if Yaakov really loved him. He had doubts. And now all of a sudden,
it's all he's
better. Right. Like, doesn't make sense.
These are the same terms that he used with Esav and told us. They shavali.
Okay.
So he didn't trust him.
Yeah, the swear, is it really it? Like, he needs it as, like, chizuk? He's such a tzaddik. He needs to be like, oh, you know what? I was on the fence if I was going to keep my father's last words, but because there's a shvuah, fine, I'll do it. Rabbi Grumman says Yaakov is very concerned.
Ammunition. It's ammunition with this conversation with Paro later when he needs to take him. Don't make me dishonor my father. My father made me swear.
Right, so that's what the Ramban says. So right, do you agree that that's pshat? All right, so Mati says he agrees with it.
Pretty smart
fine.
Guy. He did pretty well.
So it is a pshat. Is it pshat? So what I want to suggest is Rabbi Grumman's idea. Rabbi Grumman suggests that this whole idea, everything that Yaakov puts into these two psukim, is trying to get to a very clear message. And he's saying to Yosef, you and I both have been disagreeing for the last 17 years about the direction of the Jewish people. Now there's a pasuk in last week's parsha. I don't have a chumash in front of me, but when Yosef sends the brothers back up, he says a lot of things to him, Al Tirgutu, but Derech, don't fight. But he says, I want you to tell Dad how amazing I became in Egypt. Why does he need to say that? Now, is it just that at the end of the day, one of the things that kids desperately want from their parents is validation? And Yosef wondered, did my dad ever really believe in me? And now tell him, look what I became. Dad,
told you.
He got thee. I made it. Is that really what it is? So, I don't know. I'm not really sure. I think perhaps what Yaakov was hearing, what Yosef was saying, and maybe what Yaakov was hearing is, Dad, it's not only that I arrived and I was successful. He would know that when they said he became the Mishnah Lamelech. Right, even though, you know, the Jewish response could be, really? Just Mishnah Lamelech? Couldn't be Melech? Okay! But maybe what he's really saying to him is, Dad, not only did I arrive, but look! Egypt is our new home. I believe that Yaakov's statement over here, if you read between the lines, what is he saying? He's saying, son, I'll not take Bahrain Mitzrayim. I refuse to be buried in Egypt. Unesatani Mitzrayim. Take me out of Mitzrayim. Kfartani Bekburatam. Where do I need to be buried? In their burial plot. I need to be buried at home. And what's his answer? Fine, Anochi Aseket Varecha. It's not a happy, I'll do it. But it's begrudgingly. And Yaakov says, no, that's not enough. Because if it's Anochi Aseket Varecha, if that's all, I don't trust you.
Right, so Yaakov's afraid that Yosef, having risen to the second place in Mitzrayim, wants to show him that Mitzrayim is not a bad place, that it can be a good place. And Yaakov doesn't want to hear that. Yaakov wants him to understand that he wants to go back to his roots.
Exactly. So I want to show you if in the rest of the psukim we're going to take a look at, that I think that's played out time and time again. That's the nekudas hamachlokes between Yaakov and Yosef the entire time. Where's home? And where is the future of the Jewish people? And Yosef makes the argument, Egypt isn't bad. This is where we could be.
It's like Uganda.
I know that somebody that was here last week will say to me that what you said last week was the exact opposite. I know. But Yosef makes that argument, and Yaakov says, no. Take a look. Take a look at Perek Mem Chet Pasuk Aleph. Vayi acharei advarim eile. Vayomer li Yosef, hinei avicha chole. If in Pasuk Chav Chet, Yaakov says, I'm going to die, in Pasuk Aleph, it is actually going to happen. That's the deathbed scene. And what does he say? Vayomer li Yosef, hinei avicha chole, your dad is sick. Vayikach et shnei banav imot Menashe et Ephraim. He takes his kids. Which kids does he take? Menashe and Ephraim. And how does he take them? At Menashe, v'at Ephraim. Why does he take them? I believe he takes them because wherever he is philosophically on the future of the Jewish people, he does recognize that his father is the patriarch and he wants his kids to be able to see him one more time. V'yageid liYaakov. And Yaakov is told, Vayomer hinei bencha Yosef ba'ilecha. He's told that Yosef, your son, is here. Vayitchazek Yisrael, to Josh's point, he now, this strengthens the argument, he's not Yaakov, but he's Yisrael. Vayeshev alamita. He sits up in his bed. Vayomer Yaakov al Yosef. Yaakov is going to speak to Yosef. And he says, Kel shakai nirai lai beluz beretz kenan vayivarech osi. Now, what he's going to do now is, Yaakov is going to say something, but it's not 100% accurate. He's going to take two stories and turn them into one. God comes to Yaakov twice. He comes to him on the way out of Canaan, and he comes to him on the way back into Canaan. And he says two separate things in each one. So he says, God came to me and he blessed me. He said, you're going to be great. You're going to be a great nation. And your children will get the land of Canaan. Your two sons that were born in Egypt. What does he say about them? Ephraim and Menashe, Cheruven and Shimon Yuli. He flips it already. We focus on Sikel at Yadav, that he flips his hands. But it's already here that it happened. He says Ephraim and Menashe will be like Reuven and Shimon. Yaakov takes the message that God gave to him on the way out and the way back into Canaan. You'll have lots of children and you'll get the land of Canaan. And he says to him, I want you to know, you need to hear that message. And by the way, like that's one thought. And by the way, your children, Ephraim and Manasseh, they'll be like Reuven and Shimon. Is there a connection between the two? So Rashi plays around with it and says, well, there really is a connection. Because God said to me that right before Rachel died, that you're going to be a what? A Kehal Amim. But I only had one kid left. So this is going to be the kiyum of that. What's going on here? So listen to the tour carefully. The tour gives a beautiful explanation. There's a beautiful gematria that nobody at this table will like. For sure. For sure, David. But he says Ephraim and Menashe are the exact same gematria as Reuven and Shimon. Minus one. And that's why, or plus one. He's off at one. No, but even if they are, and that's why he picks Reuven and Shimon, not Levi and Yehuda. Not Levi and Yehuda. But listen.
They're plus God.
But listen to what the Torah says.
Wait. Why are you saying minus one? Over here it says he here, over here it says he here.
Oh.
Is that a typo on purpose? Or
I have no idea.
Because that's
no, so what I would say is I.
Because that's one.
Anything in my Makoros that comes from Sepharia, I can't vouch for it. But it makes my life a lot easier than...
Yes.
Anyhow, listen, but listen to what the Torah says. The Torah says, Yerek Kani Perish Rashi. Rashi, according to Rashi, it comes out, She'eretz Yisrael Nitchalka Lofi Golgolotam. How did you decide? How did you decide how Canaan divvied up? It was divvied up based on people. Ephraim and Manasseh by themselves, each shevet's about 40 to 45,000 people. So what do they get? So they're like middle of the pack shvatim. So what do they end up getting? They get two nachalos in Eretz Yisrael, right? So you're going to say, oh, it's unbelievable. That's the bracha that they get. Yosef gets a double portion of the land of Canaan. Right? Why? Because Ephraim and Manasseh each get one. Mm-hmm. It says the Torah, it's actually wrong. Yeah. Because if the whole basis for how big your Nachla was based on the number of people, then if it was Shevet Yosef, instead of being 45 and 40, they'd be 85,000. And what kind of plot would they get? Their plot would be just as big. So he says, and that's a really big deal. So he says, really, the only thing that Yosef is getting is, he's getting the naming rights for two as opposed to one. But he doesn't get his, everything is really mathematically equal. If the Torah is correct, then the question is, what is Yaakov really doing by making Ephraim and Manasseh like Reuven and Shimon? So that's one question. So then what does he say afterwards? If you have any more kids after this, right? He says, I want you to know, there's a disclaimer. They will be part of Ephraim and Manasseh. You will not have Ephraim and Manasseh and son number three. Then he says, "Vani bevoi mi padan meit alai Rachel bi eretz Canaan, ba'od kivrat eretz lavo efrata ve'ek berea sham b'derech efrati beit lachem." So he says, and now I want you to know that just I have to review history with you. Your mom, she died in Eretz Canaan. She was almost, we were like almost by Efrat, and I buried her by Beit Lechem. I'm sorry. What's Yaakov's goal? What is he trying to say here? So perhaps, consistent with everything we've said so far, take a look in Pasuk Gimel. He says, where did my dream happen? Where did God talk to me? Blues Beretz Canaan. And Pasuk Zion, where was Rachel buried? In Eretz Canaan. In the land. That's what he wants him to know. So now take a look at Pasuk Chet. Pasuk Chet, Vayar Yisrael b'nei Yosef v'yomer mi'eile. Yaakov sees these kids. And he says, who are they? Now, what kind of question is that? Now, I ask all of you, does he know who these boys are? How does he know who they are?
They came in with Yosef.
Better than, even better than that. Even better than that. This is like so, it's so pshat. No, what did he say? Pasuk Hey.
I said it earlier.
Your two boys that were born, right? What will they be? They're going to be like Ephraim and Manasseh are going to be like Reuven and Shimon. So when these two boys are in front of him, it's these two boys that he referenced before. What does he mean when he says Mi Eile? So who knows what Rashi's answer is? Rashi says he has Ruach HaKodesh. And what does he see right now? Oh dear God. Who's going to come from Ephraim? Yerav Benavat. All these evil people. Who evil people? Who's going to come from Manasseh? Other evil people. He says, how could it be? And he says to them, oh, it must be that, you know what? they were conceived betumah, they're Egyptian kids, blah blah blah. And what is he? What does Rashi say Yosef does? He pulls out his ksuba. He says, "Dad, look." It's like I have to like dial down the cynicism here a little bit, right? He says, "Dad, do you not see?" And she was a tahora and all of these things. That is Rashi's answer. Chizkuni says he couldn't see so well. So he's like, right, which is makes sense because it says later on, the Einei Yisrael Kavdu Mizoken. His eyelids were very heavy. He wasn't blind, but he had like really droopy eyelids because he was old. Okay. Fine. Those are the answers that we get. What's pshat? Take a look at the Malbim. The Malbim says, Vayar Yisrael. He says, Malbushe ha'ivrim, hayu meshunim mi malbushe ha'mitzrim. The clothing of the Jews was different than the clothing of the Egyptians. The Yosef shaya karov l'malchut v'chein banav. Yosef and his sons, who were malchus, they were royalty, what did they wear? Hayu lovshim kemalbushe sarei mitzrayim. They were wearing Egyptian clothing. They would walk in a different way, Rabbi Gamliel, because of Kavod Malchus. Yaakov sees these boys that are dressed in Egyptian clothing and says, Mi'ela, who are they? And what does Yosef say? They're my sons. They're righteous. Yire Hashem. It's because God gave them to me, bazeh, here. It's not that they are Egyptian, but because they are in Egypt, and we are who we are, they have to dress their way. Malbim gives an amazing answer. That's probably so far the best answer. Yeah.
Side point, is it possible Yaakov is getting what food to him because he did the exact same thing with clothes to his father and holding a bad eyesight?
Ooh.
So there is a little bit of that. There is. I think it's Rabbi Et Shalom. That was one of my many things I read in Lakewood. I think he has a piece like that. No. I actually said to Malki. I said to Malki when we took our sfarim. So I'm like the, I guess whatever. I'm like the, in that family, I'm like the most modern. I was like, I really, really like, I tried so hard to like not take too much, like too many things. So I had a lot of
fun.
Definitely not. Malki's like, so what I did was, most of what I took was photocopies. Because, like, everybody has, like, their parsha sheets. So nobody knows that. That wasn't my talis pick. But then I had this. Malki's like, that's your promise of nothing controversial? I was like, Rabbi Riskin, everybody knows is controversial. I'm like, Grummet, most people have no idea who he is. So it could be. So Rabbi Et Shalom, I think, connects the stories. I didn't like his piece enough to make it this year's Chabura, so maybe it'll be next year's. What's pshat? The Malbim does a beautiful job of explaining what Mi'ela is. But Rabbi Grummet reads it a little bit differently. He turns to Yaakov. Yaakov turns to Yosef and says, Mi'ela, whose kids are these? Or really, who are these kids? Are they Egyptians or are they Jews? Everything we've looked at so far, which is still really just the intro, but everything we've looked at tonight is really coming to the same point. There's a conflict between Yosef and his father about the future and the legacy of the Jewish people. And what Yaakov is saying to Yosef is, Mi'ela, I need you to tell me right now, who are these kids? Are they Egyptians or are they Jews? Now, I want to take you back for a moment to last week's parsha. Last week's parsha, Yosef reveals himself. Ani Yosef, out of Ichai, I'm Yosef. It's my father is still alive. They all get embarrassed. What does Yosef do? He comes close to them. Rashi adds in that he then shows him he has a bris milah. This is a very, very close family. That, I don't know. Yosef then, but that's not pshat. Yosef comes close to them, and what does he do? He says, no, don't worry, it's all good, everything is fine. And then listen to what he does. What does he give the brothers? He gives them clothing. It's like so weird. Why does he give them clothing? What's the point of giving them clothing? And then he gives 300 pieces of silver to Binyamin. Also, like, I couldn't find a good pshat in that. Like, everything I found was, like, a little bit out there. But why is he doing that? So I can't tell you about the 300 pieces of silver, but I can tell you that I really believe. And then, oh, and then he sends his father, Mituv Eretz Mitzrayim, the best of Egypt. I think what Yosef is doing right at that point in time is Yosef is staking his claim right then and there and saying, Abba, we're at a crossroads. You're in Canaan. I'm in Mitzrayim. The Jewish people are going to have to decide where are they going to be? Is it Mitzrayim or is it Canaan? So I'm going to make it easy for you. First off, look. 10 donkeys laden with the best of Egypt. Dad, do you see what we have here? We're living it up. We're living the dream here in Egypt. Why wouldn't you come? But why does he give the brothers clothing? What's the significance of the clothing? But Grumman says when he's giving him the clothing, what he's saying to them so clearly is, boys, you got to make a choice. Egyptian or what you're wearing. But you have to make the decision right now what it is you want to be. Now, it doesn't mean that they wouldn't be frum. They'd be frum. They'd be Jews. They would keep the mitzvos. They would not intermarry into Egypt. But they would change the focal point of the Jewish people from Canaan to Egypt. So listen to what happens in Pasuk Tet. Vayomer Yosef. Yosef is asked, who are these kids? He says them, Banayim. No, they're my sons. Asher Natan li Elokim Bazek. God gave them to me where? Bazek, here in Egypt. Vayomar kachem na'ilai vavarachem. So Yaakov says, give them to me and I will bless them. What is he saying here? He's saying, Banayim, you're telling me they're your sons. I'm saying, Kachem Elai, give them to me. So now what happens? Vene Yisrael kavdu mizokein lo yuchal erot. Yaakov's eyes were heavy, he couldn't see. Vayagesh otam elav. And he brings them close. Vayishak lehem vayichabek lehem. He kisses and hugs them. Vayomer el Yisrael Yosef, o lo panech lo pilalti. I never thought this would happen. I never thought I would see you, and now I'm seeing your children. Where are these kids right now? You're going to find out where these kids... By the way, how old are Menashe and Ephraim? They're born pre-famine. How old are they? This is 17 years after Yaakov came down to Canaan. Came down from Canaan. So these boys have to be, at the very least, at least, let's say they were born in at the very end of year 7 of the good years. They're 19, 20, 21, 25, something like that. Vayotze Yosef Otami im Berkav. Yosef takes them out of his lap.
They're a very close family, as
you said. It's so weird. Now, I understand my 8-year-old maybe sits on my lap. 12-year-old, that's getting a little bit weird. My 20-year-old, right? If you
know what it was like back then, though. I mean,
so that's
wars on those days.
Right, so that's always a good answer.
It's two of them.
It was different back then, right? How is it possible? How is it possible that Rivka was able to, as a 3-year-old, be able to, carry all those heavy water to Eliezer? You don't know what 3-year-olds were back then.
It's a different time.
All right, I'm not saying it's a bad answer. I'm not saying it can't be, but it is a little weird that Yosef, a 56-year-old father, has his 20-something-year-old children in his lap. Okay, so on his knees. All right, so I got one here, one there, right? I've got my 21-year-old, my 23-year-old.
Okay, but when you consider they lived to, like, 200 and something.
They did.
So,
No, they lived to be 147.
Sure, okay.
No, but I'm saying, and Yosef lives to be 110. So if he, yeah, you're talking
so
about
on scale, they're kids.
Nah, I'm gonna go with
one reading.
Yeah,
yeah. That wouldn't explain Rebbe.
Yeah, holy.
No.
Yeah, I like Neil's answer better, and I don't love that one. But okay, so what? Different times. Why? Let's just whatever. It's 9:43. So we have all this and not much time left. So I'm gonna leave the text and try to like summarize most of it outside. But perhaps this is all part of the power play. Yaakov says, "Mi Eila, who are they? Make a decision. Are they mine or are they Egypt's?" Yosef declares, "Banayhem, they're my kids. I'm not ready to give them up." And Yosef says, Yaakov says, "Give them to me. I want them to give a bracha." He wants them back. That's what he's arguing. So what happens? Yosef otam birkav. Yosef takes them begrudgingly off his knee and puts them there. And then, of course, there's the famous scene. He flips his hands. Why does he flip his hands? And why does he give the better credit to Ephraim and not to Menashe? So Rashi's famous answer for this one is because he looks and says, Yoshua is godless. He's going to come out of Ephraim. Menashe will have some people, but not on the same level. So the Grummet, though, says it's not true. That might be an answer, but that's not necessarily pshat. Why was Menashe called Menashe? Why was Ephraim called Ephraim? Menashe's name is God made me forget where I came from. And Ephraim is I was successful in the land that I'm in. To Yaakov, the idea of being successful in Galus, is that an idea that's foreign to him?
No.
It's his life story. His greatest moments came in Galus. Most of his wealth was amassed in Galus. By the time he gets back to Israel, his investments are making money for him. That's where he's living off what he made in Haran. So he gets that you can say, God made me great in the land that I'm from. But he says, you can't ever, 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 ever forget where home is. And the reason why he flips the hands is because he says, if I'm going to put my right hand on a child, I'm going to put the right hand on the name and the child that signifies a message that's easier for me to swallow. Hifrani Elokim be'eretz ani. You could be successful in Galus, but you can never forget where you came from. That's what he says. And then he gives them a bracha. Hamalacha goel oti mikol ra. Yivarech et hanarim. Yikarei bahem shemi. V'shem avotai bar mitzvah. V'idgul arov bekerev ha'aretz. What is he saying in that bracha? I want you to, this malach that took care of me. Remember, Avram and Yitzchak. V'idgul arov. You will be like many like the fish. Bekerev ha'aretz. Anybody, we say that every night. Anybody ever think, I'll be honest, never thought about this until this week. Anybody ever think, those words make no sense. V'yidgul arov will be great like fish. Finish the sentence. Bekerev. But that doesn't make sense. I don't aspire to be like fish on land. Right, that's a terrible thing to aspire to. What do I want to aspire to be?
Fish in the sea.
Right, multiply like the fish in the sea. That's great. Why does he say, "Vidgulorov bekerav aretz"? You'll be great like fish bekerav aretz. He was sending Yosef a message. A really important message that Rabbi Grummet quotes Rabbi Riskin saying. Fish don't ever succeed on land. What he's saying to him is, Ephraim and Menashe, you're going to be great. But understand that where you are, where you're from, and where you think you're going is not where you can be successful. You'll always be there like a fish out of water. Bekerev ha'aretz, where do you need to go? Not Egypt, but bekerev ha'aretz. It's back in the land of Israel. Yaakov's message to Yosef, Yaakov's fight with Yosef, start to finish is, where do the Jewish people belong? And Yosef says, we dress like Egyptians, we act like Egyptians, and yet we're good Jews in Chutz La'aretz. And Yaakov says it can't be. Take a look at the very last source. I apologize that we're.
It can't be that he says that. Yosef says that.
Why not?
Because doesn't Medrash say that we didn't change our clothes,
really?
We didn't change our language, we didn't change all these things, and then Yosef is saying we did.
So I'll answer you two ways. The first answer is, that's a Medrash, right? No, that's the first one. But I would argue that actually, if you hold off on that till the very end, maybe you'll see the answer to that question. Meaning when we say that they didn't change their clothing or their names and all that, maybe that was the end game. But maybe there a little piece along the way wasn't exactly like that. Listen carefully to the very last statement Yosef says. His brothers are like, oh my God, we're going to die. And Vayomer Aleihem, he says to them, Al tirau ki hatachet elokim ani, am I in place of God? Who says those words, hatachet elokim ani? No. Yaakov says those words. Who does he say those words to?
Rachel
comes and says, give me children, ki ma'in meit anochi, if not I'm dead. What does he say? Hatachet elokim anochi. Am I in place of God? He says these same words. Now take a look at the next at Pasuk Chaf Aleph. He says, "Then v'atal tiro, don't be afraid. Anochi achal kel etchem v'tapchem. I'll feed you and your children. Vayinachem otam. He comforts them. Vayidaber alibam. He speaks to their hearts. Who else? Where else do we have those words? Vayidaber alibam."
Yosef with his brothers.
Here it's Yosef to his brothers. Like the barely palm. I'll tell you who does the same thing. Shechem kidnaps and rapes Dina, and then afterwards he says to them, "No, let's be family." Vaydaber alibam. That's pretty bad. Meaning, if you're going for two statements that the Torah wants to associate you with, what does it associate with him with? Yaakov's cruel statement to Yosef's mother, followed by the way Shechem talks to them. It says Rabbi Grummet, what the Torah is trying to tell us is that Yosef is a little bit like Shechem. He's holding them captive. At this point in time, when they come back from the Kvura, Yosef is still an Egyptian. In his heart, in his soul, and in every fabric of his being. He's still Yosef at Tzaddik. There's no reason why he can't be. And he still does everything he's supposed to. But he believes that the future of the Jewish people can be in Egypt. I won't read the last psukim, but the last couple psukim tell us about Yosef's last 54 years. For 56 years, Yosef, prior to his father's death, is living this vision. And then the next 54 years, the scene in Egypt changes ever so slightly. It's not quite what it was. And when all that's happening, what does Yosef do? Yosef probably retires. He can't get a job anymore because who's going to hire him? Anything after this will be a step down. And so he becomes a grandfather, a full-time grandfather. And as a full-time grandfather, you know what he does? He raises his grandchildren, Bnei Machir ben Menashe. Great-grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And then as he's dying, what does he say to them? He says to his brothers, he says to his grandchildren, he says to his whole family, I want you to do the following. God is going to take you out of this land, to the land that God swore to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Take me with you. I want to be buried there.
Came around.
The parasha is the struggle between Yaakov and Yosef. And they go very, very strong. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And even when Yaakov's eyes finally close and he dies, there's no guarantee in his mind that what? There's no guarantee that Yosef is going to give in to Yaakov's legacy. But Yaakov ultimately wins. Because Yosef watches the scene of Egypt as it unfolds and realizes that the Jewish people will always be a fish out of sea in the wrong land unless they're in Eretz Canaan. And so his parting words, the last words that anybody speaks in Sefer Bereishis, and the last words we hear from Yosef are, a Jew belongs in Eretz Canaan. And the most amazing thing is, on top of that, the greatest lovers of Canaan, the greatest lovers of Israel, in all of the rest of Chumash, tend to be from Yosef's family. Yosef does a 180, and he realizes that he was wrong. And in the last 54 years of his life, what he does is, he slowly rehabilitates his vision for the Jewish people, changes it, shares it, and makes it the ultimate legacy of the Jewish people. And that is an amazing, amazing turnaround. In the Yosef that says, Banayhem, they're on my lap, I won't let go of them. They are Egyptian. I give you clothing. I gift you Egypt. Yosef says in the end, I won't be able to leave, I can't. But I can't stay here. And it might be hundreds of years before I leave, but I need to be buried. And Yosef is insisting, and Yosef is ultimately buried back in Canaan many years later.
After Mara Bono's, you